Hey, it's Patrick Regan here from Kintsugi Hope, and I'll be explaining to you a little bit what Kintsugi means later. But Kintsugi Hope set up 3 years ago to create safe and supportive spaces for those that are struggling with emotional and mental health. Of course, we had no idea the impact it was going to have and that COVID was on its way. And it's just been incredible what God's done. Basically, what we do is we help churches set up well-being groups in their community by training them in a 12-week program to do with well-being. So a little bit like Alcoholics Anonymous, but about well-being. And it's all taught in learning styles, and we've just got churches across the UK that are just amazing. They're delivering it in homeless shelters, to mums who've lost their kids to foster care. We've got them happening in life groups and home groups and schools and prisons and youth groups. And we are so excited that it's literally just expanded all over the UK. So if you're passionate about the issues around emotional mental health and you want to get in touch with us to see if we can help you, support you in running a wellbeing group in your community, please get in touch. We would love to be able to work with you. And the other thing just to mention before we get going is the material I'm going to say and the story I'm going to tell you in a minute is from this book called Bouncing Forwards, which has literally just come out. Notes on Resilience, Courage and Change. And you can get this. I believe that resilience is less about bouncing back. You know how they say, you know, will the economy bounce back? Will the church bounce back? I'm like, I don't want to go back. Why would I want to go back to my pre-trauma self? I've learned so much in this period. I want to learn to bounce forwards. And so this is what the book unpacks. And it's also been chosen for what's called the Big Church Read, which means that you can read it in small groups with video resources, and you can check out the Big Church Read website as well. I want to start by telling you a story. It's a really famous story, so if you've heard it before, I do apologize. It was in India. The story goes, there were two pots. One pot was whole and one had a crack in it. Each day he'd gather water from the stream and he'd begin the long walk home. The whole pot carried its load from the stream to the master's house, whereas the broken pot lost half of its water along the way. After 2 years of this happening, the broken pot felt like a complete and utter failure. He apologized to the man. I'm ashamed of myself. Why? Said the man. Because of my flaws, the pot replied. Half of the water leaks away as I walk. The water bearer asked the broken pot to look again at the route from the stream to the house. I want you to notice the beautiful flowers along the side of the path. Do you notice there are only flowers on your side of the path and not the side of the path where the whole pot was? You see, the reason is I've known about your flaw and I took advantage of it. I planted seeds along the side of the path that I carry you. And every day while we walk back from the stream, you've watered them. For 2 years, I've been able to pick beautiful flowers to decorate my master's table. Without you being the way that you are, he would not have had that beauty grace his house. Beauty often comes from brokenness. I love these verses in 2 Corinthians and that talks about 2 Corinthians 7. It says this, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show the all-surpassing powers from God and not from us. We are pressed on every side but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. How do we cope when faith gets shaken? Where suffering comes and rocks our world? Well, the fact is we don't harden up. That we realize that within our brokenness, God can still use us. It's really interesting, this verse in Corinthians is that pots were purposely made to be vulnerable, so the light could shine through them. I find that amazing, and in some ways we're created to be fragile, you know, and vulnerable, designed that way. So God's love must be able then to shine through us. We don't boast in our earthly strength, but we acknowledge a God who works through our weaknesses and our common humanity. The theologian Paul Aguda says this, Paul's point in 2 Corinthians is that our cracked, imperfect, imperfect exteriors are nothing to be ashamed of. They're vital. A well-glazed pot keeps light in. Only a pot riven with cracks can shine God's light in the world. The crack lets the light in. As Christians, we're not called to be perfect. We're called to be the ones with all our cracks and imperfections, knowing that God's glory will shine through those cracks into the world around us, and that the gold of God's love will mend our brokenness into something far beautiful than it was before. You know, sometimes to admit that we feel a bit broken takes a lot of courage. Kintsugi is a Japanese word. It means golden joinery. So if you get a pot and you break it in this country, I guess we mend it with superglue, right? And the whole idea is we try and hide the cracks. What they do in Japan is they put a gold powder in the glue. So instead of hiding the cracks, they make a feature of the cracks. Arguably, the object becomes more beautiful than it was before. It certainly becomes more unique. There isn't a pot like it on planet Earth. I want to teach you something which I'm sure is going to be really, really useful to you. It's how to trap a monkey. And I'll tell you why I'm going to teach you this a bit later. But if you want to trap a monkey, this is how you do it. You get a coconut. You make a hole in the coconut. And you put a bit of food in the coconut. And you tie the coconut to a tree. And what happens is the stupid monkey comes along and it grabs the food within the coconut. Now, all it has to do to get free is to let go. But it doesn't. It doesn't want to let go. So it grabs even tighter. And then the hunter comes along and he grabs the monkey. Stupid monkey. All it had to do in order to be free was to let go. And you know, in some ways, I'm still in the process of learning to let go. To let go of what others think of me that causes huge anxiety. To let go of my ego when I'm just trying to impress people all the time. To let go of the inner critic. You know, I had a friend who I wrote about in the book who had a nervous breakdown. He was a policeman in charge of 1,500 police officers. He had to let go of the lie that means just because that happened, he's a weak person. I've got a friend who's single and childless in her 40s and she's desperate to have kids, but she's not married. She doesn't know biologically she can have it. And she's had to let go of the pressure that society puts on people to be married and start families. I have friends who've lost loved ones to suicide. They've had to let go of questioning about whether they could have done more. The reality is to allow God's love into our brokenness. When faith gets shaken, we need to learn to let go of stuff. Sheila Walsh says this. Be still and know that I am God. The original Hebrew word, root meaning of be still doesn't mean be quiet. It means let go. That's so different, don't you think? Let go and know that I am God. Let go of trying to control your spouse. Let go of worrying about your finances. Let go of unforgiveness. Let go of your past. Let go of what you can't control. And rest in the knowledge that God is in control. I feel like because of all the stuff that's happened in our community is that we have a grieving community and it's really, really hard. And I think it's really important at this time when faith has been really shaken in so many ways that we lament properly. That lament is engaging with God in our pain. It's like turning towards God, not turning your back on him. Catherine O'Connor says this, the point of lamenting is to name the injustice, the hurt, the anger. Lament empowers the sufferers to speak for themselves. Naming suffering before reclaims human dignity and power that has been trampled and violated. Laments are the beginning of action, a rejection of passivity, and so they can revert despair. Jesus understood grief. Isaiah 53 verse 3 says that Jesus was man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. We can trust God with our grief and we can grieve well. I want to finish by telling you a story. Many years ago now, I went to 9/11 memorial site in New York and I went around the museum. And the last thing you see as you come out of the museum is this a massive cross. It's an incredible symbol. It was basically these two beams that had welded together during the explosion. And it was pulled out of this hellish wasteland. There's this photo which I think is so incredibly moving. And the local priest was called Father Brian. And Father Brian decided to persuade people to put it on a pedestal. And what he did is he held services there. Sometimes there were 25, sometimes there were 30 people there. And they'd come, and sometimes they'd be weeping. And sometimes there'd be silence. Sometimes there'd be lots of questions. There'd be unanswered prayers. There'd be laments. But in the shadow of the cross, people found hope. They found a reason to live. They found a way to handle their grief. As Christ shouted out from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? It's okay to ask why. But what's so incredible about a lament is going, you know what? I've got lots of questions, but I'm going to trust you anyway. I'm going to trust you anyway. Revelation 21, one of the most famous verses, I think, in the Bible, it talks about wiping away every tear from their eyes. That all suffering one day will be gone when a new heaven and a new earth will come into being. And I was reflecting on that the other day. To wipe away someone's tear, that's such an intimate act, isn't it? I do it with my kids and maybe my wife occasionally. But actually, God says, I'm going to wipe away every tear. It's going to be okay in the end. As we go into this year, we're going to have memorial services. We're going to have celebrations of people's lives. And I pray that we will be able to find refuge in who God is. You know, one of the most common words in the Psalms, 40% of the Psalms are laments. But one of the most common words is the word refuge, a safe place. Wouldn't it be amazing if the church becomes a safe place in the storm of life? A while ago now, I was speaking and I was talking about this sort of stuff. And my PA said to me, I've just found a new word. And the word is flawsom. And I was like, flawsom? What does that mean? And she said, it's an individual who embraces their flaws and knows they're awesome regardless. I was like, you can't just make up words. We don't do that, you know, in the UK. And they went, Google it. And there it was. What an incredible word. An individual who embraces their flaws and knows they're awesome regardless. And that's what we are because we're loved by God. May God bless you.